This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. John Cranley is Cincinnati's mayor-elect, and three new members will be joining six incumbents when the new city council is sworn in on December 1st. Joining us to discuss this week's city elections are Jean Beaupre, who's the assistant director of the Philosophy, Politics, and Public Honors Program at Xavier University, and Mac Mariani, who's an associate professor of political science and sociology at Xavier. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Well, gentlemen, if we had been sitting here last year at this time, I think the conventional wisdom was that Roxanne Qualls was probably going to be Cincinnati's new mayor, and she is not. What happened to Roxanne Qualls' effort to be the city's mayor?
Well, what happened was she supported some positions, and she was very passionate about it, that were very unpopular with voters, particularly the streetcar, the parking meter lease. John Cranley ran and ran hard on both of those issues. We've talked about this before, Gene, the 30-second TV spot. It's a real easy one to make.
Yep.
You just say, this is a waste of money. I'm against it. She's for it.
Right.
And that's all we have to say. Now, in Roxanne's case, in order to justify it, it's harder to explain why you are for something like this than it is to simply say, I'm against it.
You know, people ask all the time why politicians run negative commercials, and the short answer is because they work. And this time, he had negative commercials that, you know, were based in something that people really understood. It wasn't just calling the other person, you know, the bad guy or the bad person. And so, you know, he was just raring to go. And, you know, Howard, at the top, you said he was passionate about it, and or somebody was passionate about it. But frankly, I think the passion was only on one side this time. I mean, Roxanne, Ms. Qualls is very passionate about what she's worked on for years and years.
Yes.
But it's not visible.
It doesn't come through.
Right, right. And that, you know, that really was the beginning of her campaign. And I think a lot of people saw it as complacency. And maybe justifiably, a lot of folks just thought she, as you say, would walk right in.
In a campaign, I think the most important factor in who's going to win is who does a better job defining what politics is about. And Cranley clearly did it. There was even in the paper today, there was a voter who said, or a non-voter, who said that they didn't vote because all they're talking about is the streetcar and the parking issue. And that tells you how effective Cranley was at right. defining what this election was about. I looked at the numbers today, and of this, there were seven wards that opposed the streetcar in the last referendum. Cranley won those by an average of 69%. There were 19 wards that supported the streetcar. Cranley got about 48% of the vote. So the intensity of his support in those seven wards really brought him over the top.
And joining us now on the phone is Cincinnati Mayor-elect John Cranley. Mr. Cranley, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
It's great to be here.
You held a news conference yesterday and wasted no time again talking about ending the streetcar. And you also had a conversation with some folks in Washington about that. Describe that conversation that you had with someone in the White House.
Well, let me start by saying that actually we had a press conference yesterday in which we actually talked about a whole lot of other things. But it's true that as soon as it opened up the questions, it went to the streetcar. But it's not like we had a press conference just to talk about the streetcar. There were obviously a very important issue, but not the only issue. Secondly, it is true that Valerie Jarrett called yesterday to congratulate me, and I was very honored by that. And I took the opportunity to say that I wanted to talk to her and to get her help in repositioning, if possible, the $44 million that the federal government has given to the streetcar to another project in our community. And she said she'd be happy to help start those discussions and put me in contact with Molly Ward, who's head of intergovernmental affairs.
Now, is it, and I think they suggested that perhaps, you know, maybe the best thing is for you to travel to D.C. to meet with them about this. Is that something?
Yeah, Ms. Jarrett did say that that she felt that that it would probably make sense for me to come to D.C. To talk about this further. which, you know, obviously at the appropriate time, you know, I will do. Although at the moment, I want to get more things lined up before just running off there without, you know, I want to talk to the congressional delegation. I want to reach out to a number of folks before just jumping on a plane. I want to make sure that if we go there that we've got, you know, everything ready to go.
John, obviously that's a big piece of it. What's the other part that needs to be done if you are, in fact, going to stop this?
Oh, the other major thing, obviously, is either canceling or renegotiating the contracts with Messer and Pruse and getting out of the
right
contract with the Spanish company. So those are really the three things that have to be done.
Do you believe you can do that without ending up in court?
Yeah. I mean, you know, all the contracts have cancellation provisions, and it strikes me that at least the two local companies, if we can, would prefer to renegotiate. But, you know, either way, there's always the cancellation option.
And I think you said yesterday that if folks wanted to, streetcar supporters wanted to put this to a referendum, you weren't necessarily opposed to it going on the ballot?
No, if they want to put on the ballot like a requirement that we pay for the streetcar, and they can convince the voters to pass that, that's their right. You know,
John, if they want,
you know, if just like a couple of years ago, you know, Christopher Smitherman and others put on a charter amendment to prevent red light cameras, you know, from going into effect and to prevent trash. Tax fee. I mean, absolutely. If they believe that the voters are going to require that under the city charter that we build a streetcar, well, they have every right to go out there and get the signatures and try to put it on the ballot.
John, it's Gene Beaupre.
Hey, Gene. How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good.
I'm a little, I guess, not confused, but I'm curious how you would say this, because on the one hand, you know, you've talked, and I saw you in multiple places, talking about giving this thing a fair judgment and looking at both sides and, you know, determining what's best at the end. And then people see you get on a plane and go to Washington to see if you can change it. I mean, is there a...
Well, first, I just said that I'm going to get things lined up before I go to Washington, but...
Oh, that's listen, what that means?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the... We know that it's going to be a minimum of $100 million more locally in local tax dollars to continue the streetcar. We know that it comes at a minimum of $4 million per year in operating deficit. We already don't have enough money to get enough cops and firefighters on the street. That comes to, you know, for years, the streetcar supporters said it wouldn't affect the operating budget. That's just a complete lie. It comes directly at the expense because it comes at a $4 to $5 million annual operating deficit. We also know that we were told that it would be $70 million to go to Findlay Market. Now it's $150 million and counting. We know that the experts say it won't work unless it goes to Clifton. There's not a penny identified anywhere for that. So, I've made it clear throughout the year that I'm against this project. Now, obviously, I've got to convince a majority of council, and certainly if a majority of council goes a different way, that's a different story. Well, but my position has been clear all along.
Okay, and you have a majority of council that's on your side at this point.
Right, exactly.
And this is the one issue that you ran on hard. I mean, is this the issue that won this race for you?
Well, I think it's certainly a major contributor, as well as the parking lease. I think that both those issues clearly had a lot of people very upset about it, and I think it was symbolic to the voters that City Hall wasn't listening to them anymore. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people who have said to me the last couple of days, you know, it's just great to have somebody that's going to listen to the people. And, you know, there it seemed that, you know, and the parking meter deal is a great example where you had, and I was part of this effort, within 30 days we got the sufficient signatures for to put the parking meter deal on for a referendum. And the leader, my opponent, and their leadership, you know, I'm not trying to relitigate the campaign. It's over. I'm trying to move forward, but you guys keep asking me about this stuff. Clearly, defying the will of the petitioners on that referendum, I think, upset people enormously. And I think it would be a mistake to focus exclusively on a streetcar and forget the impact of the parking meter deal, which I think has really, in my opinion, hurt public trust in the leadership of the city, and I believe it was also a major factor because I was listening to the voters, and that's my style, is to listen and to and try to bring, you know, win-wins and solutions to the fore.
John, one of the frustrations with the voters, as you know, is the year after year there's continual uncertainty about the deficit and where you're going to make up for the basically the structural deficit that, that the city looks at every year. What changes are you going to make in terms of bringing in more a steady stream of more money or reducing costs in terms of shared services, privatization, or elsewhere to address this kind of year-on-year crisis that the city seems to go through?
Great question. Can you identify yourself, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Mac Mariani from Xavier University.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you. Yes. I mean, I think this is something we're going to major tackle in a major way. First, I was chairman of the budget committee for 8 years, so I have a lot of familiarity with the city budget, and I have some of my own ideas that I laid out in the campaign to balance the budget structurally. In fact, I think if you go to my website, johncranley.com, you'll see the plan I released back in April, which is a structurally balanced budget. But obviously, council has to agree or disagree with my priorities, and we have to work collaboratively and together. I know for a fact that Christopher Smitherman and David Mann and Kevin Flynn and several others have been calling for, you know, bringing out the budget not a couple weeks before it's due, which is because they changed the fiscal year to city, it's July 1 now or June 30th, but getting started on this early. So what I'm going to encourage city council to do and the administration to do is to lay out all these things out in January and have monthly meetings on it in a much more collaborative way with more citizen input than normal and really tackle the structurally balanced budget you know, in an open, transparent, and inclusive manner in January so that we don't end up with this, you know, two-week crisis where every year where they're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul just to get through the budget cycle.
When there's a change in the presidency in D.C., there's a transition team that's appointed, you know, to manage that process. Does that same kind of thing work with you becoming mayor? Do you have to set up a transition team to work on becoming mayor on December 1st?
Well, they have several. I mean, they have about six more weeks or eight more weeks more than we get. So, you know, we are sworn in on December 1st. So it is definitely a lot that we are dealing with right now, and we're tackling it. I've got Jay Kincaid, and I've got my co-chairmen, and Charlie Lucan and Dwight Tillery, and I've got a lot of people helping me, and we're going to be ready on December 1st. But it's definitely it's a lot of work.
I know you've only been it's only been 48 hours now, or less than 48 hours. So a lot of decisions have to be made. But have you thought any about the organization of council in terms of committee chairs and particularly the vice mayor, who that person might be?
Well, I have given a thought, but not one that not thoughts that I'm willing to share publicly at this time. I do have. I did set up meetings individually with every member of council that's been elected, and I do intend to ask every council member what they're interested in and what role they'd like to play and take all that into consideration in trying to put together a leadership team, both for vice mayor and for committee chairmanships, in order to move forward in a bipartisan and collaborative manner.
Did you not say earlier that the vice mayor would be a Democrat?
I said that was the intention. Yeah, that's what I'm going to. I'm sort of going to strongly favor.
Okay.
Cincinnati Mayor-elect John Cranley, you've got a busy few weeks ahead of you in advance of December 1st, and we appreciate you taking time to be with us this afternoon.
Hey guys, anytime. I have great respect for all of you, and look forward to coming back whenever you feel it's important.
Again, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thanks.
We are talking today about this week's Cincinnati city elections, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're discussing this week's election for Cincinnati Mayor and City Council with Jean Beaupre, who's the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program at Xavier University, and Mac Mariani, who's an associate professor of political science and sociology at Xavier. You can join the conversation 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, again, 513-419-7100. And we want to go to Will, who is calling from Clifton. Will, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, okay. I think the thing that would disturb most of the citizens out here who made sure that, that Lori Quinlivan and Roxanne Qualls both failed in their attempts at this election, I think this was largely based on the parking swindle. It's such an obvious deal. This group that is running these private parking concerns are at best pseudo governmental contractors, same ones that are corrupting our prison system. We can see from example of cities who adopted this system the problems they're going through. And I think what we want to know is why this hasn't been emphasized and why it isn't number one, because it's something that has to be acted on immediately.
Let's talk about you. The streetcar obviously got a lot of attention during the campaign, but mm-hmm. the parking lease was in a lot of Cranley commercials too.
Sure.
What about the parking deal and its impact on the election?
I think it's – I do think – I mean, it was a 1-2 punch for Cranley, and people may – because it's physical, they may understand the streetcar better and maybe gravitate more towards that. I agree with Will, the parking – you know, the parking system question is really a larger question of the philosophy of privatizing public interest. You know, it could go from having private companies pick up trash and get rid of all your trash apparatus to, you know, something as big as a parking meter. And I don't think anybody's addressed that part of it. And I think the numbers are harder to understand. I mean, Cranley talks about really physical numbers and the expense of things. And, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert at it, but I come nowhere clear understanding the parking system.
I think what caused most of the anger or the voter anger about that parking meter lease was the fact that, you know, these people went out and they got their petition. They got, you know, mm-hmm. qualified for the ballot. City moved ahead anyway. They went to court. They made a very fine legal argument about emergency ordinances. The city won. And the people who wanted to put this thing on the ballot lost. But I think there was a whole lot of resentment among voters about the fact that the city moved forward with this, even though it was clear that the people wanted to vote on it.
Well, and the exercise of collecting signatures was also probably pretty handy, because you have a group of people who you know are already opposed to this, who then form a core group of people you can contact during the campaign to say, listen, if you want to stop things like this, you know, vote for Cranley. Right. I think the other part of this is that people also anticipated that this change would lead to longer hours for paying to park, you know, that you'd have to pay in the evenings rather than just during the day, that they'd be a little bit more aggressive in enforcing it. So people are – if you're a business owner or if you're somebody who goes downtown a lot or in a neighborhood and you stop in for a restaurant, the thing you don't want to have is a $30 ticket or a $40 ticket right. every time you go out to dinner.
Right.
Very quickly, that results in people saying, you know what? I'll just drive to Kenwood. I'll just drive mm-hmm. to, you know, somewhere outside of the city and where I can get parking right in front of it. And that is something that I think hurt Qualls in places like Oakley, in places like Hyde Park, where she should have been doing very well. She has all the characteristics of a candidate who would do well in those areas.
And has in the past.
And has in the past. Right. And so I think that really hurt her in that area.
When it comes to, you know, there's talk of stopping the streetcar, undoing the parking lease, conventional wisdom is it's probably going to be easier for a new mayor and council to perhaps stop the streetcar. Undoing the parking lease could be a little bit more complicated.
Well, you know, I wonder how many people, me included, could even name who all the parties that are involved or signatories to this. But there are some, you know, international finance companies and so forth that are, you know, in this game. And it's not the same as trying to go to, you know, a contractor that's putting the rails in for a streetcar and renegotiating a contract. I mean, these are folks that trade on the big board and, you know, they make different kinds of decisions.
Yeah, and the current administration obviously made it a point, both with the streetcar and the parking, to move forward as quickly as possible to somewhat bind the hands of the Cranley administration if Cranley won. And they kind of hedged their bets and say, we're going to push forward with these. And the result is that, at least in the parking area, it's going to be significantly harder for John Cranley to pull out of that.
Right.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and we're talking about this week's city elections with Gene Beaupre and Mac Mariani from Xavier. And throughout the hour, we're also hearing from some winners of the election this week, including David Mann, who is joining us on the phone right now. Mr. Mann, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
My pleasure. How's everybody?
Fine, thank
you. Good.
How are you?
I'm great.
So refresh our memory from, you know, several months ago when you announced that you were going to run for council. Why did you decide to get in this race?
It's very simple. What happens at City Hall is very important, and I think it matters who's there. All my kids and grandkids, 8 people in all, live in the city, and in some ways there's nothing better that I might do for them to be a part of the decision-making at City Hall. So that's what drives me, plus a long-standing love of public service. And fortunately, the voters have agreed.
So tell us your perspective on the results of Tuesday with John Cranley being elected mayor and 3 new council members.
I think it's very exciting to have a new cast of players. I like John a great deal. I've worked with Roxanne. I've served with her in the past, so I would have been pleased to serve with either of them. But obviously, in so many ways, I think people are saying we want some new faces, we want some new energy and new direction, and that's what they get with John Cranley.
David, it's Gene Beaupre.
Hi, Gene.
You and I go back a ways. You were in council and in local politics when parties still caucused on Wednesdays before council meetings, and there was what I would describe as a level of discipline, if you will. And what we see now is, to many people's eye, a real blur of the lines of the impact of parties on the campaign and on elected officials. Is that true, do you think, and does that make a difference in the way people govern?
It is changed. And frankly, I think the biggest change is that we have a wholly different process for selecting the mayor. In my early days on council, the mayor was picked from the council by the council.
Right.
And that meant that if you aspire to be the mayor, it was essential that you develop cooperative, positive, constructive relationships with your colleagues. So there was a more cooperative atmosphere than there necessarily is now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the parties used to caucus, and that encouraged more unity, more opportunity to thrash out differences privately. Mm-hmm. The Sunshine Laws have changed that. You can argue about that one way or the other, but that's a new reality. But after all, at the end of the day, council is just 9 people, and you would hope that publicly, privately, however, if we hold out the interest of the public and a vision for an improved city as our goal, we ought to be able to do that. If we disagree, fine, but go about disagreeing in a way that's constructive and respectful, and then make our decisions, and then go on to the next issue that confronts us.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday night, I ask you this question. Tell us your position and what you think should happen now with regards to the streetcar project.
I think we take a minute, figure out what the cost would be of stopping, what the cost would be of going forward, including the continuing operating subsidy that will be $3 million, $4 million a year or more. And once you have that data, take into account the projected benefits of the streetcar and make a decision. I believe if we go through that analysis that the benefits will be largely outweighed by the cost, and we need to look at other ways to address transportation needs. And hopefully even the federal money that's assigned to the streetcar can be diverted to other local initiatives. And I know that John Cranley is already working on that and in communication with folks in Washington.
How long do you anticipate that getting those numbers together and, you know, presenting it to the community, how long should that take? Weeks, months, especially considering that, I guess, unless you do something, construction actually continues.
it's vital that it be done quickly. We need to make a decision, put it behind us. One of the reasons is the reason that you just indicated. We're spending money even as we talk. Secondly, the community deserves a decision, and let's get that past us one way or another and go on to the other problems we need to confront.
David, you know, obviously you've got some institutional knowledge here. Goes back a long way. How are you going to use that on council? Do you see yourself as a person who can help bring some of these warring factions together?
You know, the last thing I'm going to do is walk in and say, look, I got all this white hair, so listen to me.
Yeah, yeah. But you do. I mean, so.
And you have hair.
Yeah, right. I mean,
my attitude is: look, everybody has something to offer, and until you prove otherwise, I'm going to listen to you very seriously. In all cases, I'm going to listen to you respectfully, and then we're going to make a decision. And if your point of view causes me to change my point of view, all the good. If my point of view causes you to amend your perspective, all good, and we make a decision. And you know, God knows, we've got so many compelling problems in this community. And the sooner we can get past the two highly visible ones just now, the streetcar and the parking, and get on to worrying about poverty levels, unemployment rates, infant mortality rates, neighborhoods desperately needed development, housing stock that's collapsing around us, the better for all of us.
David, this is Mac Mariani from Xavier University. I wanted to ask you a question. As a candidate who's kind of a veteran of some head-to-head races in the past, running in a 9X race with 9 other candidates with 21 candidates for 9 seats, how did you approach the campaign differently than when you were running head-to-head?
Well, offer my sympathy to various groups that try to conduct candidate forums. We have 21 people, and you feel obliged to let each of the 21 at least say something about themselves for 2 or 3 minutes. After you've done that, you've consumed an hour.
Well, thanks for coming to ours.
Yeah, exactly. And then you start hopefully spontaneous questions. That's difficult. And, of course, in a field race like this, you're asking people not to pick A over B or to prefer me over this fellow over here, but simply give me one of your 9 votes. So the benefit does not lie at all in accentuating the differences. Did I lose you?
No, that's perfect.
Hello?
Dave,
okay.
Dave, Gene again, just real quick. Turnout in this election was 25.52%. 28.8%. I'm sorry. 58,000 ballots cast. Howard has numbers that go way back that have turnout in the 50s and 60%.
Yeah. Back to when you were first running for council.
Right. Does that trouble you in any way? I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, and you know, these kinds of decisions ought to be made by as many citizens as possible. And I don't know what I've seen some articles and some speculation. I do think, given the demographics of the community, the fact that there wasn't a serious African-American contender for mayor may have reduced interest in the black community. I'm surprised there wasn't, given the contentious issues that were on everybody's plate, I'm surprised that more people didn't come out. It's very distressing, and it's much lower than we see normally in a presidential year. But even a presidential year, we can't be too happy about all those citizens that, for whatever reason, don't participate. Maybe we need to make voting easier. I mean, maybe it should be on Sunday. There are a lot of things that we've talked about over the years.
Councilmember-elect David Mann, we appreciate you taking time to join us this afternoon. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Ben from Over the Rhine has been very patient on hold, and we'll take his call right now. Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I just wanted to ask a question, which is maybe a little sensitive given who was last on and that this is nothing to take away from Mr. Mann, but I'm curious to know how your panel feels about some of the frustrations among Democrats in the party nominating 10 instead of 9, and how that might have negatively impacted some strong challengers like Greg Landsman. And I'll take my call off the line.
Ben, we appreciate that. What about that fact? There were 9 seats, and the Democrats endorsed 10 candidates.
Yeah. I have no justification for it. I think it is the trend. When we were just speaking with Mr. Mann, it's an example of the fact that partisanship, the walls are weakening. They've had coalitions between Charterites and Democrats for years. When they, as Dave said, when they were trying to select a mayor, but on the one hand, I just don't think party affiliation means as much anymore.
Yeah, I agree totally. Most people do not vote a slate card from any party. Most people do not vote for 9 candidates. Right. The average is anywhere from 6.3 to 6.5 per voter in a city council election. There just isn't the kind of party discipline anymore that when you're handed a sample ballot at the polling place that you're going to walk in and check the boxes next to each of those names. It happens, but it doesn't happen nearly as frequently as it did years ago.
Well, just real quick, and the parties don't have much to give candidates anymore. I mean, there was a time when if you got endorsed, you got mailing lists, you got people to help you at the polling places. Maybe you got a little money, more if you're on the Republican side, that sort of thing.
Well, now there's contribution limits on, what the party can give you. I mean, I can remember when the Republican Party, if they really liked somebody like they did with Shabbat back in the 80s, they could give them $100,000. Yeah. You can't do that now.
Yeah, Mac, I'll give you the last word.
I think it's it does create kind of an awkward situation, I think. I don't think it probably mattered much, but it could potentially, if you were the next Democrat in line, in this case Landsman, you do look at that and go, geez, how might have been different? I think the problem for the Democrats was, this is a game of musical chairs. You've got 9 seats, and the 9 seats are already taken, and David Mann shows up, and you say, well, we better add a seat. And I don't see what they could have really done otherwise, that given who was asking for the seat.
We're talking about the results of this week's races for Cincinnati mayor and city council, and we'll continue that discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Cincinnati has a new mayor and 3 new council members, and we're discussing the results of those elections today with Xavier's Jean Beaupre and Mac Mariani. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, again, 513-419-7100. We've heard from a couple of new council, at least one new council member. Let's switch back just briefly as we're breaking down the mayor's race. And, we were talking about that John Cranley was able to define the race as streetcar and parking lease. Was Ms. Qualls maybe too soft in her response to those two issues?
Well,
was more aggressive, and she just didn't come across as aggressive enough.
Well, yeah, I think she was too soft in her response. But as I said before, she had a more difficult time explaining why this was a good idea, why the parking lease was a good idea. I mean, it takes up too much time. It's too much for voters to absorb in a 30-second commercial or on a piece of mail that you get in your mailbox. And she had the more difficult task than Cranley did. It's much easier to go out and say, this is terrible. She supports it. I oppose it.
Well, and I think one of the leading members of the council, the other members of the council were looking to her for leadership. And because she was on council, she's kind of forced in a position where she's going to, well, where are we going to come up with this money? They've got to find solutions. It was much easier for Cranley on the other side. On the other hand, if, you know, when the voters reacted, or the potential voters, the city reacted the way it did, it was clear that she was on the wrong side of this issue, and she chose not to adjust. She chose not to say, you know what, it's clear people don't like this, and let's rethink this. That might have changed things a little bit. It's hard to know in hindsight.
I think that voters select candidates on two issues, on two, in two ways. One is by an issue that we've been talking about all day long. And the other is in the character, or the characteristics. I don't know about the character of the candidate, and even the issue is secondary, I think, unless they see in the candidate, in the candidate's character, somebody who has leadership, somebody that moves them in some direction, somebody who, in maybe not even a full sentence, they think to themselves, this is somebody that I would like to represent me. And for reasons good or ill, I think Cranley came out on top on that. Roxanne Qualls has been done so much in the city in terms of below-the-radar kinds of building relationships, pushing issues that politicians don't generally because there isn't an immediate payoff, working in neighborhoods and that sort of thing. But, you know, that in a 30-second commercial, man, that's hard to get through.
Yeah. And Bill is calling from Sycamore Township. Bill, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello. Good afternoon. There's a, as everyone's, I'm sure, aware, a lengthy story about voter apathy in the Enquirer today.
Yes.
And in particular, I have a comment for Dr. or a question for Dr. Bupre.
Mm-hmm.
He's quoted as saying it's a difficult, I want to quote this correctly, it's pretty hard for people to wrap their heads around the idea being voting for 9 out of 21 people. Could he expand on those comments a little bit? Because it strikes me that the average person should be able to walk into a voting booth and pick 9 candidates out of a slate of 21.
Well, I can't argue with you what the average person ought to be able to do, but for as long as we've been recording these voting behaviors, and Howard mentioned it earlier, even the voters who obviously were committed, you know, this just this past Tuesday, they don't go in and vote for 9. They vote for at most fewer than 7 and more than 6. And the ballot is nonpartisan, so they have very little direction other than name recognition and whatever research they've done. And, you know, I, quite frankly, you know, as much as I'm in this game all the way, it's hard to do research on 21 candidates and come up with 9 that, you know, you think are good. And I think people feel after they've gone to the polls, which is the first thing that most people in this city did not do, and that they voted at least some number of times, you know, they've more than fulfilled their civic responsibility, and they're way ahead of the majority in the city.
One of the things that David Mann talked about was the fact that the aspect that of the campaign that changes is that there's not really much to gain by trying to bring anybody down and trying to run negative ads or anything like that. And while that's a positive thing from a civic point of view, one of the things we know is that negative ads are one of the ways that people get a ton of information about what the difference is between two candidates. And when voters are only know – they only know all these positive things and these kind of generic appeals, they're really left with, well, what's the difference between candidate A and candidate B, C, D, E, F, G? I mean, that's very hard because the candidates have no incentive to try to distinguish themselves in a way from the other candidates, because all that ends up doing is making them look bad and bringing them down in comparison.
Just a footnote on this. There were 1,599 people in the city of Cincinnati who went into a polling place, took a ballot, and did not vote for anybody for mayor.
Wow. And that's just two people.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I understand the sentiment. I mean, we'd all like to see people be, you know, they will not, we will not get to vote on these council members for 4 years now. This is the first time that's the case. And they can do either a lot of harm or a lot of good in 4 years, and we have nothing to say about it until 4 years from now. That alone would drive me to the polls.
When we were, before we started the show, you had the sheet of the council placings, you know, 1 through 9,
right,
10 and beyond. And you looked at that, and your comment was off the air that this is a strange vote. Why do you call it a strange vote?
Well, they're strange every time we do a 9X race, you know, and there's never – you like to apply a logic, you know, and but it is self-imposed on it. I think it's interesting because of the rearrangement of the incumbents that were in there and some of the new people that are on. But you can't – for me, at least, I can't look at this and say, oh, I understand what the voters did. And that's probably the way it should be because you have, you know, however many people voting different ways. I remember when they used to do recounts and they would actually have the physical ballot out with check marks on the names. And, you know, you would look at a ballot and you'd see how one person voted and you just could not apply any logic that you understood to that particular person's voting pattern.
Let's one of the things that John Cranley has to do before December 1st, presumably, is pick a vice mayor. When we were talking to him, he was noncommittal on that. If it were, as he said, you know, what he had said early, before the election, to be a Democrat,
right.
There are only five Democrats on council.
Right.
And there's some conventional wisdom that since three of those Democrats were big supporters of Roxanne Qualls, that they may have eliminated themselves from possibility. So that leaves P.G. Sittenfeld.
Right.
And David Mann as possibilities for vice mayor.
Right. And if I were to guess, and this is total guess, I would say David Mann would be the one. I don't think it would be PG.
And I was going to ask you to explain that because we were talking about that the other night, why you thought PG might not be a choice for John Cranley.
PG obviously ran first and by a large amount of votes in the council race. He had about 5,000 more votes than John Cranley did. And
let's pause on that for a second. 5,000 more votes than the mayor got.
That's right. Yeah, than the mayor-elect had. Now, John, I don't want to attribute too much in the way of motives to John Cranley, but if I were sitting in his seat, I would look at P.G. Sittenfeld and see him as a potential rival. You know, if something goes wrong, if it's, you know, things go badly in the first term, you could see a P.G. Sittenfeld possibly challenging him. I don't think he wants to put him in that position. You know, that he is someday, I don't know when, it may be 8 years from now, P.G. Sittenfeld is probably going to run for mayor of the city of Cincinnati.
But wouldn't that be a reason to get him to
it
be invested
be.
In your
well,
in the program
yeah,
that you're putting
I mean,
forward?
You could play, you know, you could play the Abraham Lincoln game, keep your enemies close to you, you know,
right.
You know,
right.
And
enemies is probably going a little far.
Well, yeah, enemy, yeah, but
rivals.
People who rivals,
right,
and keep them close to you and bring them in, and he could probably do that, but nonetheless, PG is a potential rival. Somewhere down the road, whether it's 4 years from now or 8 years from now when John Cranley is presumably finishing his second term.
I don't disagree with that. I just think that PG may not – he's not – doesn't have a history of wanting to wait 4 years to run for the next thing.
Right.
And, you know, county commission seats come up.
Certainly.
And other things come
That's
up.
Right.
And so he may very well be gone pretty soon. About Dave, I don't know. I think one of the real question in the basic question in this is, as mayor, does he have to reward his friends and not reward his people who didn't support him, or should he try and bring some of those folks around with some of the committee chairmanships and things like that? And you know that's. And really, if you're among the nine, you have to respect if you don't get a chair that he's doing something else to try and solidify his control of council because he doesn't vote in council. So he needs five votes every time
right.
he wants something.
And there are certainly more important positions than
right.
vice mayor,
right.
you know, as committee chair. The
vice
budget
mayor.
Budget and finance.
Right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. But vice mayor, you get to just go to the things that the mayor
that
doesn't
the mayor
want to
go to.
And that's about it.
But, you know, budget and finance chairman right. is a powerful position.
Speaking of budget and finance, someone had emailed in a question. How is Cranley going to up fire and police staff and still balance the budget? And that's something that he talked about, that they were going to, you know, get the budget in control. But at the same time, if you're going to add police officers and firefighters, that costs money. And the city already routinely has a general fund budget deficit, sometimes many millions of dollars.
I think we have to give campaigning politicians a certain latitude, because in addition to those, Mr. Cranley talked about doing something in each one of the 52 neighborhoods and, you know, many other things. And those are all, I mean, you put a wish list out there when you're a candidate. And I don't fault them for that.
I think the reality is that you have to either raise revenue, right, or you have to find places to save money. And I think the easiest way to do that, and I know that – I don't know – politically easiest way to do it is to find opportunities to share services with the county or other municipalities, maybe more privatization, not necessarily selling off assets, but finding ways to do things through private companies that would cost less in terms of city payroll. Those are sometimes controversial as well, though. So no matter which way he goes, he's gonna find some resistance.
What about the future of city manager Milton Dehoney? Two of his biggest issues that he's worked on were the streetcar project and the parking lease, and those are both targets of John Cranley. Would it be safe to assume that he might be here for the interim, but he's probably not a long-term city manager under John Cranley?
He'd probably want to get a LinkedIn account or something like that. That'd be probably
yeah, that's probably right. Well, you know, Cranley said during the campaign, he said Milton Dehoney could apply for the job. Yeah. So clearly he's going to look at other people, and Milton Dehoney has been Mark Mallory's city manager.
Right.
John Cranley is going to want his city manager, and whether that's Milton Dehoney or not is probably highly doubtful.
Yeah.
Let's I think, Howard, you wrote about this when you were talking about Mark Mallory's state of the current mayor – State of the City address and the way that he ran council, where, you know, if you didn't agree with him, you got a little sidebar, and I think you called it a come to Jesus speech.
Right.
right. Knowing that that's the style that, you know, I as a reporter have seen at City Hall the last 8 years, how do you think Cranley will compare to Mark Mallory?
Well, I mean, obviously he's going to have to do that. I think it's going to be in a different style, you know, than Mark Mallory. And Mark Mallory could be very confrontational with some of the, you know, recalcitrant council members too when he wanted something. But, you know, every mayor has his or her own style. Those discussions are going to take place, whether or not they take place privately or sitting up at the dais at city council, I don't know, remains to be seen.
I think if Martin Mallory has a come to Jesus style, Cranley will have a Jesus is coming to you style.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Never too much to look into the future, realizing we just ended the city election on Tuesday. This is only Thursday. But generally, you know, you had 2 years for these council members to run a campaign. And it was almost once they got elected, fundraising started for the next election. Now we're into council members are going to serve 4-year terms. So truly, are they going to be able to put off the fundraising and worrying about getting reelected for a couple of years, or are some of these folks going to be right back into gearing up for 2017?
I mean, I think that they're going to continue to fundraise. There's no question you're not going to put that off. But I do think it gives them a little bit of a window to maybe make some hard decisions in the first year that would be much harder to make if they had an election in 2 years. So I think that if you're going to see changes, especially trying to deal with that structural deficit and get that in order, take the pain in the first year so you don't have to have the pain going forward.
That's right.
And the pain is, you know, make decisions that are unpopular, you know, but if you've got time to do things, you can even identify where they're unpopular and then begin to do things to rebuild that. I definitely think that's the case. And I think, frankly, it's a better way to govern if people actually do turn out and vote then.
Ironically, it could be, you know, Lori Quinlivan's legacy, right? She was the one pushing for the 4-year terms and ends up not winning a seat on council. But this is, you know, it could have a positive impact.
Just real quickly, we've got about 30 seconds. If John Cranley is successful in stopping the streetcar, is that going to go quietly, or is that something that we're going to be talking about for the next year if it ends up on the ballot as it could?
Oh, if it ends up on the ballot, that would be a different issue. But I think there's enough minutiae here in trying to figure all this out that as it stretches out, people will become less and less interested in it.
Yeah, I think people are really getting a little bit tired of it. Right. I think this was if you talk about mandates, I mean, clearly he made it pretty clear all the way along that this was, you know, one of his top issues. I think the voters are going to expect him to follow through on it.
And that is it. We've been talking about the results of this week's election for Cincinnati Mayor and City Council with Gene Beaupre, who's the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program at Xavier University, and Mac Mariani, who's an Associate Professor of Political Science and Sociology at Xavier. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Rick Andrus. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.